Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. This is the story of a part-time business that turned into a multi-million dollar company. Angie Stocklin is the co-founder of One Click Ventures, which owns a network of online stores. They own Readers.com, which sells reading glasses, Sunglass Warehouse, which sells, as you might have guessed, sunglasses, and they own a collection of other sites, which includes Scarves.net, Handbag Heaven, ABCNeckties.com, and Angie, thank you so much for coming here and telling your story.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I forgot to say, this interview is sponsored by Walker Corporate Law. Scott Edward Walker is the entrepreneur's lawyer. I will tell you more about him soon, but we'll get right into the story first. Angie, what kind of revenue can you generate by selling scarves, handbags, sunglasses, etc.?
It's kind of funny that you ask. So the first year in business, we made about $90,000 in revenue, which doesn't sound like a lot, but out of our home, you know, that was significant value for us. Last year, we ended the year at $8.5 million, and we're expected to do $10 million this year.
$8.5 million in 2013?
That's correct.
Unbelievable. And it's all bootstrapped, right?
That's correct, yes. Self-funded.
Yeah. And $90,000 in revenue does sound like a lot to me, especially considering what you were doing at the time. You were, actually, what were you doing?
I was a school psychologist full-time, and my husband was an IT guy.
What does it mean that he was an IT guy?
He was actually a web developer
at
a local company called Angie's List.
Oh, I know Angie's List.
Yeah.
Okay. And it sounds like he and you were kicking around some ideas for businesses. In fact, you considered, well, what were you considering in real estate?
Real estate, house flipping. It was not a great time to get into house flipping, actually, and we're not very handy, so that also was a good reason not to do that.
Yeah, so glad. We're talking about 2005.
Yeah, 2005. It ended up being a very good thing that we didn't do that. We looked at everything from house flipping to franchises and like a blinds franchise. My only caveat was no restaurants because I'd worked in restaurants for years and years and I did not want to deal with the hours and the headaches associated with food business.
You know what? People fantasize so much about owning a restaurant because it seems like so much fun. You get to have people over. It's like you're doing a dinner party every day and you get to get paid for it. But it's not fun. You have to be there too much. You know, it's not easy to grow. There's so much competition. When you were evaluating businesses, what helped you figure out whether you should be doing one or the other?
That's a great question. I think at first we probably didn't know. In our very first business, we launched an affiliate site that sold letters from Santa Claus. And it was so much fun. The owner of the business was right in Indiana, which is where we're located. He sent them from Santa Claus, Indiana, so they come with a Santa Claus, Indiana stamp on the outside of the envelope. And we loved putting together the website and just the marketing that went into that. And so when we decided to get a little bit larger and purchase a business that could maybe sustain itself, we looked at something online. So that really kind of drove that decision.
I see. Because you had this early success with this simple idea, you figured, all right, let's stick with what's working. Why go into real estate if we're not handy and we don't have much experience there? So the business that you're talking about was called mailfromsantaclaus.com, right?
That's correct.
I clicked on that URL and I ended up on letterbysanta.com.
That's correct.
How did that work? What are we talking about here? An affiliate deal where Letter by Santa was already built and all you had to do was buy a domain and start sending traffic to it?
You got it, actually, yeah. He had prepackaged ideas for us, and so all we had to do was build a website, kind of upload his content. It was already generated for us, and we sent traffic, and he actually took care of the entire checkout process as well, like an affiliate does. So it was a great starter business.
So how did you get traffic to send over?
We dabbled in PPC, and that was the early stages of Google. And so, you know, we tried our best to get ranked organically as well. And we had, after the first season, we had a little bit of email subscriber list. And so we used that as well.
So I don't understand how that would work because it seems like what you did was bought a domain and then automatically redirected it to your affiliate. Did you own letterbysanta.com?
That we actually did own that site.
Oh, I see.
We bought two sites and then directed it to the owner's site. So we had two Santa Letter affiliate sites at the end. Yeah.
I see. Okay. All right. And so then you had someone manage this for you. So if I click over, I end up on IGCO.com where I get to create my letter. What's that?
That is, so we no longer own Letter by Santa.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, we sold that into the original owner. So that's probably the links may be a little different than they were at the time. But that is the parent company.
Okay. So I should step away from the weeds now and just go back and understand the bigger picture here, which is you really were learning on this site. How did you learn how to do pay-per-click?
We just dug in and learned from scratch. We literally, I had a psychology background. My husband had a technology background. Mm-hmm. So we learned everything from scratch. And it's not the way that most people grow up and own their own business, but it was wonderful for us having control of the process.
Did you know things about language that non-psychologists wouldn't know? Could you get in people's heads and not just have them click, but have them die to click, be eager to do it?
I think probably not, although no. That sounds lovely. I think my psychology background probably comes in more handy now that we have 60 team members than it did back in the day when it was just the two of us. Mm-hmm. But we really looked at, like, how can you be concise and how do you drive people to click on ads? And we just read and read and read and read as much as we could get our hands on.
Do you remember one thing that you learned back then that was especially helpful?
Start small and test small. So we would, especially with pay-per-click, we would start with a small amount of money, test the ad, see how well it went, really focus on the conversion, and look at pretty much the whole nine yards before we would dive in deep, because it was just the two of us and we were starting small. So I think just really taking calculated risks and thinking.
How much money are we talking about for these small tests?
Oh my goodness, $50.
Oh, $50 a day or $50 a week?
I don't remember. The first year that we owned the business, we brought in $2,000 in revenue. Okay. So they were really small. We're talking about really small numbers here.
$2,000 in revenues doing Santa letters.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Did it break even?
You know what? I don't remember.
Okay.
Actually.
But we're not talking about huge spending. If you spent anything, it was no more than $4,000 that first year learning how to do PPC.
You've got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when it came to content, I know that you guys are still really good at content. Do you remember one thing that you learned back then, back when things were simple?
I think keep it simple, honestly.
For content also?
Yeah, don't clutter your page. Give people what they want, but don't give them too much. Because if you give them too much, they're going to walk away. They're not going to read the entire page. Make sure you get your point across concisely.
Did you write those articles yourself back then?
Oh, have you found some of those articles?
You know what? I kind of do. Let me see if I could find some. I bet I can.
My name is all over the internet. So I did actually write some of them, and some of them we paid $10 per article to have written for us.
I see. $9.97, you can get a letter directly from Santa. Was Santa actually writing the letters? I was just trying to see if I could come up. Usually, you know what? I'm really proud of myself because in interviews, I can go back while we're talking and find something and say, wow, this is something you wrote all that time ago. I can't find anything. All right. That's too bad.
That's
okay. So then you seem pretty happy that I'm not going back and finding those old articles.
I promise it's the most well-written article you've ever found.
All right. So then you decide that you're going to buy a real business.
That's correct.
That's when you bought sunglasswarehouse.com.
Yes, that's correct.
How did you pick that company to buy?
We searched Biz Buy Sell and a lot of similar sites for e-commerce companies that were for sale. We found a Canadian company that sold sunglasses and we fell in love with it. And we actually lost the bid to someone else. And we thought it was the end of the world, of course. But Randy, who is my husband, he's always kind of been business development and I've been nuts and bolts. And so he just started contacting other similar companies, a lot of sunglass companies, to see if anybody was interested in selling. And they were. And we were really looking for something that would be easy to work out of our house. So a small product, if it was going to be e-commerce based and not like a software business, and something that was a low cost but had great potential. And that's how we ended up with sunglasses.
I see. And you're going to fulfill the orders from your house.
We did. Yes.
Okay. Wow. I see now. So this, I was able to actually find, I do see Sunglass Warehouse from the year before you bought it, 2004. I see March Madness specials, Paris Hilton style glasses, Aussie style glasses. I see Morpheus sunglasses, football, all that stuff. This is what it was. We're talking about a very basic site. It was hosted on Yahoo Shopping.
Yes. Right? Yes. And we kept it on Yahoo for quite a while.
How many years did you keep it Yahoo?
Probably three. Okay. I'm thinking three if I remember correctly.
How much money was it making before you bought it?
You know, we purchased the site for $10,000.
Wow.
And I don't remember exactly how much revenue it was bringing in, but it was not a lot of money.
And it was profitable?
You know what we found over the years, when people keep businesses in their home, they don't always keep great records.
Oh, okay.
So sometimes things get a little mixed up and you don't always know what you're getting until you have it.
You know, I get that. I mean, frankly, I keep my business on a very professional level. I don't do it in my house. I have records and bookkeepers, and still it's tougher than I expected to keep everything straight. I can't imagine if someone's doing a business in low thousands of dollars, it's harder.
Exactly. Absolutely. Right?
So what was the hardest thing about acquiring? What was a big surprise?
Oh my goodness. Well, when we purchased the business, we redesigned it from scratch. We got all new inventory. So we didn't purchase any of his existing inventory. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just started from scratch, but kept the domain and kept some of his categories. So I think probably just the sheer amount of work that goes into it. We did all of our own product photography. I added all the products to the site on our own. And then Randy was in charge of marketing and technology, getting the site designed. Working with Yahoo Store was one of the biggest surprises. It's very user-friendly in some respects, and then other respects, it's quite difficult to manage for someone that understands code, and their proprietary code is really kind of, there's not a lot of people that know it.
The difference seems to be night and day. I mean, each shot looks really professionally done. You have a nice little shadow on all of them. The site is more organized. There's more content on it. I did interview Benha, though, from Eichen Has Cheeseburger. He bought that business, and he said that one of the first things he needed to know to do was to not touch anything so that it doesn't interrupt too much of what's working. Did you spend any time saying we're just going to let it sit there so that we don't jar the customers and what's working?
Our first business, we did not. So up until last year, we had 9 different brands, and we learned a lot over the years. Sunglass Warehouse has always been a little our test run, if you will, and kind of my baby. And so as we got a little bit larger and we learned more about how the internet works and how customers function, we would buy brands and we wouldn't touch them for quite some time and just make small changes along the way and then maybe roll out a redesign. With Sunglass Warehouse, we didn't know to do that. And so, no, we pretty much scrapped it from the start and started over.
So what happens when you scrap it from the start that makes you say never again?
Well, I think customers that are coming back to the site and expecting the same products to be there, expecting the same prices, perhaps if you change prices, you really are going to lose them from the start. So that customer list isn't as useful or as valuable as you thought it might be.
Okay. Yeah. Is that why you bought it instead of develop your own site, customer list?
And that was one of the reasons, yeah.
What else?
Yeah. I think that there was a template in place with a pre-existing site, so we could see, like, what categories did they have and how did they structure their product pages. And even though we made a lot of changes, it was nice to have that past history in place. And, you know, it came with history. Google or Yahoo keeps track of all of that. So even though we scrapped the site, we could see, like, what were the sales the year before and what products were people purchasing and where were they landing and where were they coming from. And so it's nice to have that background history.
I see.
Yeah.
And I do see a lot of Gucci glasses and Coach, but those aren't really from Gucci and Coach, right?
No.
Gucci style.
It was more acceptable in 2005 and 2006 than it is now. That's a pretty big no-no in today's terms. But that was the site as we purchased it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I've had other entrepreneurs on who I've talked to about this kind of business where it was Gucci style stuff, and they don't like talking about it. In fact, they feel like if I even just bring it up that I'm somehow trying to catch them. But I agree with you. I think there was a time when it was okay. And yeah. Today, and when we say it was okay, it was never obviously legal to sell copies. What was okay is that Google wasn't causing trouble. Today they do, right?
Correct, yes.
Right, what was okay was that you were saying style of, and today maybe you can't.
Yeah, that's correct. And even, I think PayPal was actually the first company – to come and say, you can't use our services if you have Compare Two styles on your site. Mm. And we definitely never tried to sell the Compare Two glasses as Gucci glasses. It definitely drove a lot of traffic to our site. And so, you know, when you're running a business and you get traffic and people buy, you kind of keep doing what you're doing.
All right. So now the things that you did well when you were selling letters from Santa, you can come back and bring to the sunglass business, PPC, mm-hmm. SEO, article writing.
Yes.
How did that work? Did it work better or harder here?
That's a good question. It was different because, for one, the Santa letter business is very seasonal. And so you work all year and then you have 6 weeks at the most, to kind of make it or break it. If you will.
Really? Just 6 weeks?
Yeah. It's actually probably more like 4 weeks because you have to get your order in time for the letter to get made and shipped.
Wow. Because people want it just before summer, but during summer, if they need it, they'll go to the local store and get it.
Oh, sorry. For the Santa letter business.
Oh, sorry. The Santa letters. Of course. Yes. But this is more year round then?
This is more year round. Yeah. So you don't have to wait an entire year to see the fruits of your labor, if you will.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's definitely more fashion oriented. So, bloggers weren't nearly as popular as they are today. But there were other outlets where articles would be more appropriate than just seasonal Santa type articles.
I see. And so you would write articles on other sites and then link back to your businesses. That's why I couldn't find it on the Santa Claus site. I kept looking for blog posts there that were so good that people were linking to. No, I see.
Yes. I see. Yeah, it was a different time.
How do you have – I mean, that even works today. I don't know that maybe today the content needs to be different. But it still is tough to write so much. What did you do back then? Did you repurpose a lot of articles?
So I wrote some of them myself, and we paid $10 an article for contract writers.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. And so there are a lot of kids out there, college kids especially, that would love $10 for a one-page article.
I do remember that. All right. So then how did it do after the first few months of the transition?
Pretty good. We didn't see our family and friends for quite some time. Okay. We were kind of holed up in our house, and, you know, we both had our full-time jobs. Just kind of getting our feet wet and figuring it all out. And then about a year and a half into it, it had grown to the size where we could no longer contain it in our house. And then it was time to move on and find some office space.
Wow, that must have been a celebration when you actually have to move out.
It was. Yeah. It was. It was a really good feeling.
How do you and Randy celebrate?
We actually took a trip to Hawaii.
Oh, wow. Cool.
It was the first time that we'd taken any money out of the business. So before since we had jobs, we were able to pile every cent back into the business to grow it. And when we finally got big enough to get office space, we went on vacation. And that was kind of the first time that we'd taken money out. So,
how long did you wait before you quit your job?
I waited a year and a half.
Okay.
And Randy waited 2.5 years.
So how do you know when it's time to quit?
My hair was falling out.
Really? It was just becoming too much.
It became to do both jobs.
Okay. And then why did your husband wait longer than you did?
I think because we've always been, we've taken calculated risks. And so we knew we had enough money in there to support both of us. But both of us leaving our jobs and not having insurance and, you know, just the things that go along with being self-employed were a little scary at first. Looking back, we could have both gone at the same time, but doing it for the first time was just a little scary.
Hey, you guys don't seem like daredevils. You take risks, but they're very calculated risks. They're very thought out.
That's correct.
You weren't even – were you an entrepreneur growing up?
No. I mean, I had lemonade stand along the road and things of that nature.
But I heard you grew up in a small town in the country, I should say.
In the country, yeah.
In the country. And so how did your lemonade stand do there?
Not so hot.
Not no. Well.
I don't think I sold anything.
Okay. So then where did this entrepreneur come from? Was it because Randy had the bug and then you caught it from him? Or do you feel like there was something inside you?
Well, I had been exposed to it. My dad and his brothers owned an implement business growing up. And so it wasn't that I'd never thought of it, but definitely Randy was the driver behind this entire thing. He had started three businesses before we'd even met, consulting businesses with his friends, and he was always frustrated that they weren't as into it as he was. And so I kind of knew when we decided to get married that it would become a family business. I don't know if I knew it would be this, what it is today, but I'm someone who, if I take a step in, I get committed really easily. And so once we decided to do it, then we decided to do it.
Sunglasses business then does well. When do you decide you're going to get into another business?
We actually decided right away, pretty soon, like a year in. Yeah, and we purchased some dropship businesses, and we quickly learned that we didn't care for those quite as much because we didn't have control over the process. We liked being in control of shipping and customer service and quality control and all those things that you lose with a dropship business.
Mm-hmm. What was the first dropship business that you got into?
I believe it was Cedar Station, which sold cedar furniture.
Okay.
And then we had Safety Chest, which sold stun guns and pepper spray.
So then what's the problem with someone else shipping out your stun guns? You just get to focus on SEO, on pay-per-click, on the design of the site, on the photographs of the product. What happened that made you decide not to do it?
I think that for some people, it's probably a really great choice, the dropship angle. But we really learned early on that we loved control of the process. And when it was a dropship business, I couldn't always choose the method of shipping. And I couldn't, if they went on vacation and couldn't ship the product, our customer didn't get it. And that was out of our control. And so we learned early on that customers drive the business. Customers are the ones that come back. They're the ones that keep you afloat. And we really just wanted full control of that entire process.
I know what you mean. When you love what you're doing and you care about the product, you want full control of the whole process. You can't give it up. I will sometimes be invited to speak at conferences, and they'll fly me out anywhere, and they'll say, we need you to interview people. And I'll say, well, who are you going to have me interview? Well, it doesn't matter. You're such a good interviewer. We'll put someone up with you. Because the reason I'm a good interviewer is I know who I'm going to interview. You know, I'm not just going to have a conversation with someone who has nothing going on. You know, there's a reason why these people are interesting. They come to me interesting. Well, there's a process where I do some research, where I understand how they worked. I don't just pull this stuff out of thin air. I spend some time. And so I know it. I get it. And I think to outsiders, it doesn't feel like it's necessary. But you're right. To some people, the dropship business does make sense, and it worked for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The hard part, though, is when you're not dropshipping, you have to buy your own inventory.
We do.
How do you figure out what to buy?
That was a couple spreadsheets and several nights worth of head ringing. I believe our very first order was about $2,000, which now doesn't seem like very much, but back then it was a lot. And we spread it out to get as many styles as possible. And we were trying to get, you know, men's styles and women's styles and sports styles and aviator styles and try to run the gamut so that everybody would have something when they came to our site. And it's gotten easier over the years after we have, you know, history. But the first order was pretty difficult.
Yeah. And what, did you ever get stuck with like 1,000 Paris Hilton sunglasses or or anything like that?
You know, we've had some mistakes along the way, but never 1,000 Paris Hilton sunglasses, which is good.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that...
I guess it could just as easily turn into Miley Cyrus sunglasses.
Exactly.
It doesn't work out with Paris Hilton.
Yeah, exactly. That's the nice thing about celebrities is they tend to wear similar things across the board. So yeah. Somebody falls out of vogue, you can move to the next one.
You know, I met this guy years ago who was running a business where he would basically be looking at celebrity magazines, seeing what jewelry they wore, and then creating a version of that jewelry as seen on whatever. And it was cubic zirconium. It was very inexpensive, like $20, but he was making tons of money off of this stuff. And I had no idea because, frankly, you know, Angie, I'm a guy, as you can tell.
Yeah.
I just buy guy stuff. I think about guy things. I don't think about sunglasses online. I don't think about scarves and jewelry and things like that. And so this whole part of the world is invisible to me.
Yeah.
So how did you know about – I guess did you know about scarves because you wore scarves and that's how you ended up with the scarf business?
So pretty soon after we started selling sunglasses online, we started going to trade shows in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Which really opened our eyes to all the possibilities in the world. And so – we didn't necessarily at the start, we didn't set out to just do fashion accessories, but that is kind of where we ended up in terms of the scarves and the handbags and the ties. And we met all of these vendors at trade shows.
And if you're meeting someone at a trade show, how do you know if his product is going to sell so well that it's worth investing in a whole business to sell it?
That's a good question. We looked at a lot of products that we didn't start selling, cufflinks, or jewelry, for instance. Jewelry is a very competitive market. And so once we were large enough and we had a little team, we could come back, we could look at, you know, traffic for certain keywords. We could look at just how many sites are selling these items in general. Are big brands selling them? Is it a product that's really name brand driven? There are a lot of factors that go into it.
So actually I don't get that. Help me understand it. I want to understand how to do it. Is there, when you say that there are all these factors, how do you weigh them against each other? How do you know from an outsider's point of view whether they're going to sell or not? Is there a tool online that tells you? Like I'm used to people saying, I went and I did a keyword search and I saw that tons of people were searching for this issue and I knew that there was a business around it. But that works for software. Mm-hmm. How do you do things in the physical business, in the physical product world?
We really did look at keyword searches related to products to see how many people were searching for it online.
Okay.
And in terms of cufflinks, there were people searching for it, but there's not a large enough market. We didn't think there was a large enough market to invest in a cufflinks only site. Mm-hmm. There are people out there that have cufflink sites, and we actually talked to a few of them, which is another way that, you know, we've kind of decided what to buy and what not to buy, is looking at sites that already exist. To see if we wanted to purchase their site. Scarves.net was actually the only site that we started completely from scratch. And that was based a lot on trend research. And scarves have become commonplace, but at the time, several years ago, it was very trendy. And so we thought, let's get in this market, let's stay here for 2-3 years. And if it's over and we've made our money back, then that's a success.
And when you say make your money back, what's the investment that you have to recoup?
It was pretty small for scarves.net. We actually started on affordablescarves.com, which we, I believe we just paid, you know, the $10 or $12 price from GoDaddy. And then we invested a couple $1,000s in scarves. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, we had our own technology team in-house. And so for them to be able to create a site from scratch didn't cost nearly as much as it did when we were first starting out and we had to outsource everything.
Why did you buy businesses instead of starting more the way that you just described?
A lot of it honestly has to do with the customer list and at the time Google, because they had the, whether it's true or not, the sandbox, which if you're a new domain, the rumor is that you would go into the sandbox for up to a year. And we knew that we couldn't afford to be out of search for that long.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm on scarves.net right now, and on the bottom it says a member of the Affordable Style Network. What's that?
Affordable Style is our pseudonym. So One Click Ventures is very technical. It's a very technical name, and it is our legal entity. But bloggers and magazines don't necessarily gravitate towards a name like that. And so we created affordablestyle.com to kind of help ease that transition.
As your DBA.
Yeah, you got it.
I love DBAs. Mixergy is my DBA. It means that when you incorporate, you don't have to think of the actual final name. And then if you come up with a couple of other names, you can have a couple of DBAs. So Mixergy is my DBA, and I could accept checks under the Mixergy name.
Nice.
All right. I think I've got a bunch here. I want to come back in a moment. But first, let me do a quick plug for Scott Edward Walker. He is the entrepreneur's lawyer, as I said at the top of the interview. Actually, Andrew, I've got a successful entrepreneur here in you. You've worked with lawyers over the years. Do you have any advice for entrepreneurs about how to pick the right lawyer?
I think it's really important to find someone that talks your language. And I know lawyers talk, lawyers speak. But we found a lawyer really early that we felt trust. And that's, I think, the number one most important thing. If you get a bad vibe from somebody during your consultation, then they're not the right guy for you or gal. They're not the right lawyer. So make sure that you can trust them, that they've got a good track record, and they just talk your language and understand your business.
That's a good point. There is a different way of speaking that some people just feel too uptight to me, which means that I'm not going to work out well with them. Some people feel like they're too casual. When I first moved to LA, I talked to this lawyer who was a lawyer of a major publicly traded company. He was just too much of a surfer dude. I get that he worked well for them, I think, but he wouldn't have worked well with me. So you do have to click with them, which is why I keep not just saying that to the audience, you guys should check out Scott Edward Walker, but I keep saying that he's a friend of mine, a guy who I've known for a long time. He's not the kind of friend that we're going to go for a hike this Sunday together, but he's a friend that I've known through business for a long time. And if you'd like to get to know him, first check out his website, walkercorporatelaw.com. And what you'll see there is several other entrepreneurs who you know and respect who've given testimonials, who've said nice things about him. And as you click around, you'll notice that he focuses on the startup world, which is very important because we in the startup tech community have unique issues that others wouldn't understand. And finally, I say, if he's interesting to you and you think that you could click, connect with him and have a conversation. His email address is scott@walkercorporatelaw.com. Check him out, walkercorporatelaw.com. Did you ever have any legal issues where someone sent you a cease and desist?
We actually have, yes.
I feel like every single entrepreneur has that.
Especially when we were doing the, I believe it was when we were doing the compare to styles on Sunglass Warehouse. Yep. Still, every once in a while we would run into a style that would be too similar to something that had been trademarked or patented. And so we've never had an issue where we couldn't just cease selling the product. We've always been okay, but yeah, it's definitely something that you have to deal with from time to time.
When you start having multiple brands, is it harder to start keeping track of everything, of inventory, of web design, of customers?
Yes, absolutely it is. So we've ran into issues where you only have so many team members, you only have so much time in the day, and where do you focus your time? You know, where do I focus my time? Where does Randy focus his time? And so that's one of the reasons we have less brands today than we did last year. We just got to a point where if we're going to grow these brands and really invest time and energy into them, we needed to, soften our portfolio a little bit so we could have time to focus and really give the brands what they deserve.
And when it's time to sell, where do you go to sell them?
We actually have a broker that we use, and he sold three of our brands last year, and he's actually working on three more right now.
I noticed that you actually say that on your website. We are selling these brands. I didn't think that anyone would be public about it. Which three are you selling?
Scarves.net, HandbagHeaven.com, and ABC Neckties.
Okay. Why are you talking publicly about it? Why not just let the broker subtly let people know and then just let it happen?
They've only been for sale for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And locally in the Indianapolis community, we've talked about our plans moving forward, which is to focus on eyewear. And so we haven't really, I guess, gone public, but locally, the news media and everyone in the community knows that, we're moving in a different direction. So I guess maybe it's just not a secret.
Yeah, I guess, you know what, I don't see the benefit of pretending that you're not selling it unless it's the kind of thing where you have to sell because it's a fire sale, in which case you don't want anyone to know that the thing's going down because then it helps perpetuate the feeling that it's going down. Who's the broker?
Quiet Light.
Quiet Light.
Yes.
How do you pick a right broker to buy and sell businesses? I'm going to check out Quiet Light. I never heard of them.
That's a really good question. So our finance guy thankfully takes care of most of that for us. But we've worked with several different brokers over the years because, like I said, we purchased most of these businesses as existing businesses. Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of gotten a feel for how people work. And we work with Jason at Quiet Light, and he's just been really great at understanding, like really listening to us, understanding what we want. And he seems really I don't want to say that other people aren't, but he's a very high character individual, and we know we can trust him.
Wow, look at this. I'm on the site right now, quietlightbrokerage.com. I see the listings. He's got a moving company lead gen business for $1.9 million, hospitality equipment furniture site for $1.25 million with income of $410,000. Really interesting. I had no idea this even existed.
Yeah.
Wow. When you have to start scaling it, you need to start bringing people in. Who's the first person you hired? I mean, the position you hired for.
Okay, we've hired two people for part-time order fulfillment.
Okay, and order fulfillment means answering those phones.
And pick and pack.
And pick and pack, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
You had phone numbers on your site, I think, from day one.
We did. So actually, I guess the first unpaid person that we hired was Randy's mom, and she helped take care of the phone calls while we were at work, which was a real blessing. She would get two or three calls a day, and she worked from home anyway, and so we didn't have enough money to pay her at the time, but it was really a huge blessing to our business.
And then you hired two people. They came into your home, picked the glasses up, boxed them up with a note, put it in the mail.
Yes, only when we were home. So yeah. really hired my friends, I guess,
yep,
to come in and do it in our home. And then when we moved into office space, then we were able to, you know, keep regular hours and have the same part-time people come.
Okay. And then what's the next position that you hired for?
Technology.
Okay.
And marketing. Those came back to back. We hired a full-time marketing associate and then a in-house developer.
And this was still when you were on the Yahoo platform?
It was, yes.
It was. Wow. So you could hire still to this day developers who work with the Yahoo platform.
So actually he didn't. He was a PHP MySQL developer. And we hired him to build our new sites. And okay, once we had those up and running, so we started the Reader's site next, after the dropship businesses, and we kind of sold those off. We did Reader's, readingglassesshopper.com, and we hired our developer to build that site from scratch.
And what did you use to build that?
Xcart.
Okay. And are you still on Xcart?
We are, yes.
You are? Oh, wow.
Yeah. I know. We're a little bit larger customer than they usually have, but we went through an entire kind of seek and find process last year where we looked at other systems, and we finally decided Xcart was still the right system for
Why?
Us.
What do you like about Xcart?
We like how customizable it is. So we have a team of 7 developers now, and they're all PHP, MySQL, and so they know the language. It's easy to work with. It's not, you know, a really hard language from what I understand. I'm not a developer. And all of our sites are built already on the Xcart platform. And we really just like the way that you can pretty much do anything you want within their licensing agreement.
You know, the one position I always wanted to hire for was like the equivalent, I don't know what the equivalent of COO is for a younger company.
Yeah.
But someone who's just the chief operating officer, who's in charge of running the place. Were you ever able to hire someone like that?
Well, that's me, actually.
So you're still the COO?
Yeah.
Doesn't that ever get tiring? Don't you feel like, well, I've done this over and over. Someone needs to do this. No. That's
no.
The part you like.
I love it.
You do.
I absolutely love it. So, you know, over time, I've been able to give bits and pieces of my job away as we've hired. So I started out doing order fulfillment, and I did all the product photography and added all the products to the site. So essentially did merchandising and buying and kind of did customer service as well. Mm-hmm. And over time, it's been really nice to see how I could give pieces of my position away and have teams grow from that. But I love having done it all. No, it's every day is different. And so whether it's a different site or if it's a different team, every day is fun and exciting and different. And yeah, it never gets old.
I remember reading Ray Kroc's book where he said little things that used to take up just a fraction of his day suddenly grew into whole positions and then teams and then departments. And it's just amazing to watch the business grow. Is that the process that you took where you'd find one piece of your job and say, how do I clarify it into a position and hand it over?
Absolutely.
Can you
yes.
talk more about that? Because I know that with you, it's a very intentional process. Can you give me an example?
Well, the first like full-time hire that I made for my team was an order fulfillment specialist to be there 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week. And I thought in my mind that was the easiest portion to hand over because I had all the processes down in terms of this is how you pack the order and this is how we want it to look and this is how we want the box to look and this is how the label to look. And so it was the easiest in my mind to teach moving forward. And so once I handed that off, then I could kind of focus on the customer service side of the business and hire someone to hand that off to. And this is how we treat our customers. This is our policy. This is how.
How do you codify that so that the next person can pick it up? Back in the early days, how did you do it?
We wrote a lot of things down.
You did?
Literally, yeah. Notes all over the place.
So you said, if a customer complains that something broke, we don't challenge them. We just handle it this way. That's the kind of thing you're talking about.
You got it. Yeah, absolutely.
So I've been thinking of doing more of that here at Mixergy. I wonder if anyone's going to read it, though, if it becomes this 20-page document of if someone complains, make sure they get a refund. I don't want to jerk them around. If someone has some issue and they can't download it for them and send it to them in some way that makes sense. I don't know that people go through that.
It is hard when your business gets more sophisticated. Early on, when you're only talking to 20 customers a day, it's pretty easy to get a feel because customer service person can put someone on hold, or after the call, we can talk about how I would have handled that a little bit differently. Like it's okay for now, but next time, just go ahead and give them a free pair and you know, don't press them on it. So I think if you hire somebody that has your values and understands your value prop, we didn't establish core values until a little bit later in our business, but we always ran our business with core values in terms of, you know, treat people right. And that is a little bit vague, so you have to define it. But I think running with a core value set definitely helps people understand your rules.
I do kind of feel like systems are, just doing it is the first step. Then systems are the next step in organization's growth, where everything is documented and organized. So someone who never met you and doesn't know you specifically, your way specifically, can just go and figure out how you've done it. And then values are the next step up, so that if there isn't something documented, people understand we care more about the customer than we care about another pair of sunglasses. So how do you come up with your values?
So we were about 25 people large when we finally decided to document our values and write them down. Mm-hmm. And we just started asking for feedback. So we sent out an email to the team asking them, like, when you think about One Click Ventures, what comes to mind? And we kind of grew from there. We had small groups. We got together as a large group. We ended up with 20 or 25 different values, and we put some together, and then we ended up just like voting as a group. And then we sat with the team and defined them. Like, what does this mean to us? When you say, you know, act like an owner, what does that mean? Act like an owner.
Okay. So what does it mean for you, act like an owner?
Act like an owner means to always think about the business when you're making decisions. So that goes from, you know, like, how do we remain profitable to how would Angie want me to treat this customer, treat them with respect always. But in every decision that you make, act like you're the owner of the business, and how would you want this to run? And obviously we have to hire the right people so that they can act like us, but it's a core value that's really popular.
You are also, like me, a fan of Tony Hsieh's book, Delivering Happiness, mm-hmm. which I just thought would be this boring business book for some reason. I don't know why. I thought it would just be a collection of business advice. It's not. It's a story of a guy who made it, who is so much smarter than people realize because he's quiet, and he's more of an entrepreneur hustler than people realize, or at least he was in the early days. Mm-hmm. And he's more systematic than anyone who's just an entrepreneur it would be. And so when you say, we went to our employees and we said, what's our values? What do you stand for? It reminds me of the way that he did it, where he sent out an email to people and he said, what do we stand for already? Did it come from him?
Oh, we have been very inspired by Tony Hsieh and Zappos. We love the culture of Zappos. Rainey and I actually got to tour the facility when we were in Las Vegas a few years ago. We love the way they treat their customers and that they really focus on the customer experience. Definitely a lot of OneClick has been inspired by the Zappos brand.
Hmm. What else did you like about that book?
I think it was interesting to see that he wasn't, because we didn't necessarily start our business the way that other people start their businesses. And so you like to read about other people that are kind of going against the grain and making it anyway. And obviously the success that he was able to get in such a small amount of time is very inspiring.
Yeah. Like, too, the way that he was thinking about business being like poker, about, you know, and I guess it was a period in his life where he was playing a lot of poker. And then when he got into business, he said, look, in poker, it's not just about how good a player you are, but the table that you decide to sit down at. And so when he sat down at the shoe table, he decided he was going to get into that industry. He wanted to make sure that it was big enough to be worth his while, that there was an opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did this interview, you said, because a PR person suggested it.
Yes.
You know, I like when people are open with me like that. Most of my interviewees are fans or people who are in our community, and I go and reach out to them. But I like that we connected, and you're outside of my community. I wouldn't have known that there was a scarf business that was this big, that Readers.com was a reading glasses business that was doing so well. But I'm curious, why do you have a PR person? What are you looking for?
So we actually have a team of three PR.
You guys have a team of three? You know what? I keep underestimating your company. You told me 8.5 because you're so nice, because I see a picture of you and your husband, because the story in the about page just sounds like it's the two of you in a kitchen table, which is true. For some reason, I always feel like it's a small – and I have the data right here. April wrote at the top of my notes how big mm-hmm. your company is. 60 employees as of 60 employees, $8.5 million. Yeah, but I still think small. So yeah, you have the PR department. Why?
Yes, we have a PR department to get our name out there. So they work with bloggers, they do product placements with magazines. They help write our story and our About Us pages. We also have a content team, but they kind of lead the direction for what we want our business to look like in the community. Uh-huh. And Renee and I know that our start is a little bit different than others, and so they definitely focus on that small business aspect. And we're from a small town as well, so.
I saw that too, right. And the small town part comes into it.
Yeah.
You know what? How many people do I interview who like to pretend they're part of Silicon Valley and they're in Silicon Valley and they won't talk much about it? And I like your approach, going the other direction. Hey, let me say this to the audience. If you like this type of story, if you're looking for more stories of entrepreneurs who are really building companies, the kind of entrepreneurs you don't see on TechCrunch, and I love TechCrunch, I read it all the time, you don't see on TechMeme, and again, I love TechMeme, I read it all the time, you don't see in the pages of the Wall Street Journal. Actually, you guys probably will be if you haven't been in the Wall Street Journal. You are that kind of company. But if you like to go outside of the usual tech community and you want to hear those stories because they're inspiring, because you learn something along the way, because they really put you in the frame of mind of being an entrepreneur, I urge you to sign up to Mixergy Premium, where I have over 1,000 interviews with proven entrepreneurs who come and they spend an hour and they break down their stories. Most people who subscribe to Mixergy Premium are real entrepreneurs with real companies and who listen to get the kind of exposure that, frankly, last night I had when I went out for drinks here in San Francisco, where everyone is in the tech community, everyone's building a company, and they're all breaking down how they do it. If you're not here, this is the next best thing to being here, where you get to listen to those stories. And keep it on in the background while you're showering, keep it on in the background while you're driving into work, while you're listening, or while you're running, I should say. Try it out. Go to MixergyPremium.com. Sign up. Tony Hsieh was one of the first entrepreneurs to come here and do an interview back before he was noticed. He came in and supported because we had a mutual friend who encouraged him to do it. I urge you to go sign up at MixergyPremium.com. Be a part of this entrepreneur revolution that we're all experiencing. Don't just watch it. Don't just listen to it. Be a part of it by learning from successful entrepreneurs, building your own company, and then hopefully, you'll do what Angie did, which is come back here and tell your story. Angie, what's the best part of having made it?
Oh, have we made it?
I feel like you've made it. So what's the best part of it? You're thinking no, huh?
Yeah, I'm like, oh gosh. It seems every time we hit our goal, we make a bigger one. And so I don't feel like we've made it yet. But honestly, the best part for me is getting to build a team and work with that team every single day. It's such a neat experience to be able to like choose the people that you work with every single day. I love working with my team. I love how loyal they are to our brands, and how excited and talented and energetic they are. And it's just such a fun process.
Congratulations on all the success. We didn't even talk about all the subsequent. Oh, wait, let me see. Hang on. I got my data here before I go. I was about to say goodbye, but let me check out my data. Okay. Here's what my data is showing. Oh yeah. You guys are very good for organic search, cheap sunglasses, sunglass warehouse, very good stuff. You do paid search. We talked about that. You still do it to this day and it's more competitive.
Yes.
I see Pinterest is very big for you. People are pinning and you guys are very good with that. That's part of the PR team. Is that their work?
Yeah, we have a social media expert as well that does Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
A few entrepreneurs gave me access to different tools for seeing how my interviewees do. Mm-hmm. One of them is What Runs Where. What Runs Where shows me that you buy ads, banner ads. I see these photos of just very simple, very crisp. It just says Sunglass Warehouse and a photo of sunglasses. Very Apple-y. Are you still taking those pictures?
I do not, thank goodness, take the pictures anymore. Okay. We have a full-time photographer.
Oh, wow. All right. Yeah, there are no skeletons in this closet that I can find. So I will just say thank you for doing this interview.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
You bet. Thank you all for being a part of it. If you got anything of value, please find a way to go say thank you to Angie. I always tell you guys, whether it's on Mixergy or you read it in Inc. magazine or the Wall Street Journal or anywhere else, if you got anything of value, go and say thank you. I had someone in the audience who recently said, hey, I'm going to Argentina. Can you introduce me to this guy? And I said, no way. You know why I said no way? When I did a search in my inbox, I said, did he ever email me anything? No. Do we have any connection? No. He's just a stranger who's asking me for an introduction to someone. If I don't have that connection with them in the past, then forget it. I said no. And you can bet that anyone who you connect with in the future is going to do something similar. So start off the relationship by saying thank you. So years later, when you need something and they do that search, they'll see, oh yeah, it's a guy who was really grateful a while back and he's built something since then. That's the woman who just said thank you because of an interview. So I'm going to do it right here. Angie, thank you so much for doing this interview.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.